right now. This is Veronica Entwistle. Hi, everybody. Now, how many of you are out there? I'm learning something about marketing because, of course, you all know that I've just my book is coming down the birth canal on Tuesday on Amazon. So now I'm learning all about numbers and I'm learning how to market because I always trusted spirit. I never have marketed myself. I've just thought spirit will bring me the right people. The guides will bring me the right people and so on. So now I'm booting up. I'm learning all about marketing. Well, I'm learning little bits about marketing. So how many callers do we have on? I want you to phone me and tell me you're on with me. So we've been talking a lot about raising the fields in frequency because that's what I talk about every week. Because that's the thing we want to learn and do as we go through our lives. Change the energy, change the reality. I don't know about you, but for me, sometimes it's really difficult to do that because as you go out and paddle along through all kinds of situations in the world, and people are influenced by all kinds of situations in the world, it's very difficult to keep, for me, to keep my energy fields really high. And I know that they're relatively high most of the time, but when I hit pockets of people that kind of resonate with difficulties I've had in the past, lo and behold, what have you got? You got yourself a kind of a lower frequency energy again, and sometimes you wear it like a hat or like a hair shirt until you catch on that you've pulled that in. So I want us to practice together becoming higher and higher frequency. And when you get stuck, just don't deny it. Admit it to yourself. Admit it to me. Admit it to your friends so we can get to work and shift it again. So I'm hoping that you're going to call in. I don't know what the numbers are. It's you can get them right on the front of BBS radio station, Live 1. And I really want you to do that. Now, my new book, and this is the first book I've ever written. I've always been kind of... Hi, everybody. Did you miss me? We had a station break, literally a break in the station. talking about higher frequency energies, one of the things that I learned to do through the years, because I really cracked up many years ago, and this book, My Near Life Experience, tells my story. It's not all super elegant, high frequency. It's a really real life gutsy story about things that I went through and ways I had to salvage myself through some of the wreckage of my life experiences. And I know all of you have some version of that. But one of the things that I learned to do is to do a wild dance. And I've told you this before. I started it in 1977 and I still do it. And I usually use Van Morrison because if you use all kinds of music with different lyrics that is kind of bouncy, sometimes you have lyrics like, oh, nobody loves me and everybody hates me and you've dumped me for someone else, or, you know, you get all that stuff and you don't want to suck that kind of information into your subconscious. Because when I do the dance is not always pretty. If you watched me, you'd go, holy mackerel. But anyway, usually the dance is I boogie, 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 and I sing. And as I sing along with the words, hopefully the lyrics are something that lift me. And otherwise, I wouldn't bother. And then I intone those words throughout my body to give my body resonance. So it's not really about Van Morrison or whoever I'm dancing to. It's not about the dance itself. But as I boogie and gyrate and hopefully move my waist enough to give me some shape as I get older, I really move. I build up speed and build up speed, and I move faster and faster. And I build up a sweat. I color up my chakras until they get really, really bright. And then I call in, you know, when we do our sacred geometric structures, I call in the lights from those structures and have them enhance the colors of my chakras and also create a kind of a workspace wherever I'm doing this. I can do it in if I'm visiting people, I can hole up in a little bathroom and do it if I need to. I like to do it galloping around in a larger space. I do it inside most of the time because where I've lived, it was easier to count on having an inside space. And I don't really want people to see me. But what happened to me, and this might work for you as well, As I boogied, as I danced at the beginning, because I had visions out of control, like a lot of you might have experienced, and I learned about blood sugar, and blood sugar fluctuations will give you visions out of control. Diabetes will give you visions out of control. Mental and emotional distress can give you visions out of control. And they're not the fun kinds of visions where you can apply them to other people's situations very well. So I would do my crazy dance, I called it, by starting off with some kind of question like, how is my mother was on the other side. How is my mother? Or how is so-and-so? Or am I ever going to meet another man? That was one of the ones I used way back when. Some sort of question like that. And then I would go through my dance and I would empty myself except for the coloring of the chakras and the movement of the body and the singing and the toning of my of the words of the song. Or sometimes I would chant some like Om Namah Bhagavate, something like that, and keep the lyrics of the song down really low. But I moved and moved and moved and moved until my body would be resonant on a higher level. The endorphins kick into the brain. Anybody who's done any jogging or high-intensity exercise, know that feeling when all of a sudden, boom, everything changes inside and you know that the endorphins are coming up and that your brain has changed its frequency, right? Or your neurotransmissions are now kicked in. So it's funny. So I really have loved my dance. And throughout my life, I've moved a lot. I blame my husband, my first husband, the one who passed on when we were in our 30s. he moved a lot. Of course, I moved with him, right? And then after he died, and I had a really hard time in Vancouver, I moved on a lot. I moved to Edmonton and several other places, okay? And then I settled back into Vancouver again, still doing my dance and so on. And then I met my second husband, and he was an aircraft, and he moved a lot of places. So we just kept moving. And one of the most stabilizing things that I had was my dance meditation workout. And so I want to read you a couple of little teeny vignettes from my book. And one of them was about when I lived in Pennsylvania with my second husband. It was a town, you know, the kind of townhouse, which there's an upstairs main floor and then down there's a basement. And the basement is just rafters and laundry stuff and so on. It's nothing fancy. And I, at this point, was going back to university to finish a degree that was almost finished. But as the years went on, I needed to get it completed. And so I did that. And let me see, what else can I tell you? So each day I would descend into the basement. By this time I had a baby and she would be asleep having her afternoon nap. And I would paddle on down to the basement. So there amongst the rafters and the laundry and the old broken down green couch and the funny computer and all of that where I was studying to get my degree, I would do my dance meditation. And what was interesting about my life, and even reading my own story, is amuses me a lot, is it was kind of an ugly basement in a way. You know what I mean? You know what a basement is like, old-fashioned with the rafters and the cedar boards and all that stuff. And I mean, it wasn't uglier, but it was very functional. But down there, I had the most beautiful visions. I had the most amazing altered states that would come. So one of the things that would happen is my husband, my first husband, would come around and visit with me. And it was hard because we would get the giggles and we would he would play charades with me or he would mimic me or something and I'd be laughing my head off. So anyway, this one day, I don't know how much of this I should read. Okay. As I called forth my energy connections, I could see them more and more clearly as they expanded and grew. One day, as I rounded the corners of the basement, pyramids appeared over me, growing far beyond the rafters and laundry of this townhouse basement. They even extended like tetrahedrons, forward and back. I'd say that they filled the space. But in the etheric, the space never gets filled, does it? It truly moves into realm after realm. One workout day, the unfolding began a new level of spectacular. I was deeply entranced, moving to the music, singing those vibrations throughout my entire energy body. The geometrics vaulted, and with them the fields vibrated higher and higher. I loved it. Lo and behold, there he was, Mark, my vibrational husband. He was dancing with me, our teeth reflecting back and forth from our big grins as he matched and mocked my movements. I giggled. I've sure missed his humor since he passed. "Stop, Mark. I only have a little bit of time before Bridget wakes up. I want to follow these visions." He turned and looked and danced forward. He turned and looked and danced forward as I did. There were new guides there, including one named Joseph, whom I grew to love. He was the closest to being human. The others seemed more like angels at that point. Then at the back of the basement were vortices shining and whirling, and in their center I saw the Buddha. Again, I wept. En route through this experience were different beings at different levels, and I was understanding more and more of existence in different vibrational levels. As frequency by frequency, layer by layer, they emerged. There that day, I saw Mark and I shared some of the same guides. It was amazing. We cavorted in harmony, gazing ahead at these beings. But then the moment of change came when he turned and he danced away up a different path. "Mark," I called after him with my mind. "Mark, where are you going?" He just grinned back at me and danced away. I turned to my own spiritual scenario again, engrossed by the rising beings and the changing emanations, alternately weeping and thinking. Somehow, I knew more than I expected to know about the differences in paths, and I was grateful. That basement sounds and feels amazing in retrospect. Another being, not one of my guides, at least not in the normal sense of guides, kept showing up at different times. This one was odd, maybe threatening looking. He had interesting cheek lines, and his facial skin was leathery like a goat's, almost black. He had curling horns like certain mountain goats have. Now, I had read enough and studied enough to know that we don't need to have uncomfortable visitations with beings from the dark. So as I encountered this one, I worked at erasing him from the fields. "Go to the light, go on, go to the light," I waved him away. He was carrying a portable recording editing system. This was in 1987, back then when technology was bulky. I actually envied his. He held it, showing me that it could do a ton of things, receiving, editing, replicating with minimal labor, like what would become possible for us. Again, I waved him away, not wanting to be wooed by stuff. Enough of Greeks bearing gifts, I thought. "What is the matter?" he asked. "You're scaring me," I said. "You look so strange." "You don't look so hot to me either," I laughed. It's funny because he went away after that. And when I was writing this part of the book, I thought, gee, I hope I can call him back in. So let's call him back in. He was adorable, but I was just afraid because I didn't understand what he was. So I'd love your feedback on that little bit of story. But this whole book is about vignettes, little vignettes that of change and growth and so on that I've been through in my life. So let's all join one another for the sacred geometrics. Let's build our own temple, sort of like that one that I built in the basement. It used to be such an exalted place of exploration for me. It was just beautiful. But if you saw it, you'd go, "Looks terrible here. Looks like an old basement." So let's change your environment as well. Let's all join each other. Take a few deep breaths. And let's do this coherent. We're creating a coherent field. And in this field, we can all feel healing. So above your head, about 2 miles, create a golden ball. And below your spine, about 40 feet, another golden ball. Now drop a filament of gold light from the upper golden ball down through the spine and into the lower golden ball. Good. No, come on. Some of you aren't taking it seriously. Now you over there, you just got to get that thing connected. Now from the upper golden ball, drop your pyramid to about waist height. Okay, good. And upside down, another pyramid pointing into the lower golden ball. Now when you push the bases together, one sticking up, one sticking down, okay, and they meet, you've got yourself a beautiful diamond. And push it out so you can play inside of it, okay? And now inside of the diamond, you want to have your crystal ball. And it's so beautiful. It's shimmering in every color of the rainbow, every frequency color that you can imagine, and some that are way beyond your imagination. Because if you've ever had an out-of-body experience or a near-death experience or transcendent experience, you know, amazing visions, you know that colors are not at all the same. They are so, I guess, iridescent, translucent. They're just so amazing. So you might want to say with your crystal ball, I want to see what she's talking about. Show me these amazing iridescent colors. Good. Now inside of that, there's a star, like a three-dimensional Star of David, but actually it's your light body. It's a star-like light that is emanating from you, from your the essence of your soul radiating out. And your light body, this big star in which you are encased, is your vehicle of transforming, your vehicle of shifting dimensions. So see yourself with that beautiful star. That's it. Good. And now I want you to spin and spin and spin. Just keep spinning and spinning and spinning in that star. And as you spin and spin and spin, I want you to look at the magical screens in front of you. Good. And on the first screen, and I'm calling them magical because here you are moving and moving, and yet you've got a still screen in front of you that's capable of doing multidimensional pictures. Oh my goodness. I want this little being from outer space to come back in because he probably has technology that'll even match this, right? In any case, here we go. And now we take a look at the first screen, and on that screen, you're going to make a movie of something, of what it is you want to become in this life. You could say it's your dharma. So the movie is about what you want to become. Good. I always want to become actively multidimensional, being able to associate from any dimension. I'm not there yet. Holy mackerel. Okay, so then wrap that in light. When you get to where you dream of being, wrap that in light and move it over to the side. And now we've got the second screen, and the second screen is you developing something you really want to develop or create. It could be home and family, right? It could be a beautiful house. It could be a ranch. It could be a multidimensional time-space travel, right? It could be around the world travel. It could be going up the rivers in Europe from Germany to France and so on. That's right. It could be following your genealogy. It could be undoing all your genealogy. Who cares which thing it is? It's got to be yours right from the heart, right from the heart of your DNA and your cellular doodah. Good. And I want you to see all of the resources coming together to help you create your project. And it's money, time, people, influences, inspiration, and it comes and it just flows to you. You have hardly any break in the flow of information that you can use. That's it. There you go. And now watch. Look at your project. It's developed so beautifully. Take a minute to cheer for yourself. Yay, me, I did it, I did it. Okay, now we can't stop there because you want to attract, you want the resources to continue long enough to keep fueling your project until its natural ending, till its natural denouement. So you see the people, money, the time, everything it takes to bring your project to a natural ending. And now we know that we have all kinds of consciousnesses available to us. And source energy is really the beginning of all, or the, I don't know what you want to call it. We'll just say we source is the great source, okay? But for me, there are so many different levels of consciousness around, right? And that you get to choose who you want to take into the Galactic Healing Center. Which of your guides do you want to take? Which kind of influences do you want to take into the Galactic Healing Center to surround our healing table? Good. And now say, take a look at the table. Isn't it beautiful? Okay. Now, the first person to go onto the table is you or me, and have these beings standing around the table looking down at you. And you can ask them what it is you want from them, right? And if you don't know, you could say, I don't know, because I've been working on myself. I'm not sure where to go from here. They're very good at, they're swift, and they are multidimensional. They are able to shape shift. They're able to replicate themselves. So take a look. Look at their little faces. If they've got faces, some of them are pulsing vibrational beings. Some are humanic. Some are animals. Some are dolls. I don't know what's going on around your table. But in my own, there are like these amazing vibrational figures. And they tell me, when I'm lying on the table, they will tell me things that I need to do, or things that I need to do for my health or for some of my greater plans here in LA. What are they telling you, or what are you asking for from them? Think big, because one of the things I'm thinking about is a lot of our healing, yours and mine, really has to take place with the sense of, what is the word? Act locally, think globally, right? So everything you do, you want to impact the greater, right? So when you're wanting something for yourself, you don't want something to hoard away. You want something to really enhance or contribute. They call that the Dharma, is when you come in with a purpose. You're the only one in the universe that's you, holy mackerel. And with that Dharma, that's your purpose. Now, it doesn't have to be MGM purpose. It doesn't have to be the most magnificent thing in the world. It doesn't have to be competitive with other people. It's your purpose is who you are and the statement that you make into the world. And because your contribution, if we look at the mess, the melee that the world is going through right now, how you contribute to that, I don't just mean with money. I mean in your attitude, in your visions, right? Let's vision one another doing well, feeling well, having enough food, doing free energy. Let's all the envisioning that we can do. But maybe your talent is singing, or maybe your talent is writing, or maybe your talent is building houses, or maybe your talent is making people feel better about themselves when they're really bleak. And maybe your talent is coloring pretty pictures. I don't know. It doesn't matter. Sewing clothes, coming up with ideas, really refreshing the minds of other people. But everything you do when we're doing healing on ourselves, okay, everything you ask to do is like, I want to put a cord. I want to put my contribution into the collective. I was always taught, or I was taught for the last 20 years or so, that as we do that, it impacts the movement of the collective. Now, you know that if you're at the bottom of the ocean and you kick your foot, there is a ripple that goes right to the top and probably around, but it may dissipate because it's such a big, big project. But if all of us were doing that, there could be a lifting of the reality. And you and I also know change the energy, change the reality. Your reality, okay, can be showing up at a different dimension, right? There you go. Instead of being clogged by the CNN dimensional reality, the marketed lobbied reality, the doggy, we don't have to be that. We can sit in the middle of it and envision and feel ourselves transcending a lot of the blocks and a lot of the mind control that's been used out there. You'll control your mind to rise above, and that's going to have a huge impact on all kinds of people. I heard someone, I think it was Jim Self, because I do all these wonderful interviews that I love. Oh, goody. Thank you. I have a caller, but you're going to wait just for a few minutes, I hope. Please. And so let me see. I can't remember what I was going to say with that. Oh, dear. Jim Self was talking about something, and it's going to hit me like a ton of bricks. Okay, so right now we're going to move on from there. We're going to wrap ourselves in light, move that little table that we were on over to the side, over to the side. That's it. And now we're going to bring in a fresh table. Good. And now we're going to invite in. I've got a couple of very, very depressed people in my world because I want to talk a tiny bit. I know these are our structures, but I want to talk a tiny bit about what's going on. And in many cases, because the frequencies are rising these days, okay, I know of four people in a week that had heart attacks. And when I look at it psychically, if I were to be a psychic, I'd go, oh, it's interesting because the way they were concealing themselves and not letting their hearts open or shut or express the hurt or whatever, you know, the heart is a pulsing muscle, isn't it? That they couldn't handle it anymore. And all of them are in recovery really fast as well, which is kind of interesting. No guarantee there, but let's hope it works. So what I'm saying to you that a lot of people are also in initiation periods of many different descriptions because the way the frequencies are moving, it's like you're kind of we're being pushed to examine our attachments, the way we think about things, the way we're attached to things, the way our identity, I love to go in and do identity work, don't I? The way our identity is developed by what we're attached to. So, you know, say, oh, so-and-so's really pretty. She has the best clothes. She has a very good income. She's got a great retirement and a wonderful car. And she teaches school or she, whatever it is she does. She's big in the corporation or, but these are all about her, but they aren't really her. You understand? And sometimes initiation periods are the periods of your life where you can't, nothing works. You won't impress people with how you define yourself. You will not impress people with your income. You will not, you know what I mean? You have to see yourself coming because we don't get out of this alive, and I think you already knew that. But what do we take with us? And I see a lot of spirits. I'm really having great communion with my own father these days, and he died 2 years ago or 2.5 years ago. And I'm learning a great deal. He's helping me, how can I put this? Anyway, the whole thing is that the kind of connection that I've had with him that neither of us understood is becoming clearer and clearer. And like I say to you, I don't really talk to spirits, or I didn't think I wanted to do that. But the only ones that come to me and talk to me are ones that want to unhook something that was left behind or complete some sort of contract between, say, family members or somebody that you had a real altercation with or heartbreaking between lovers, you know, those kinds of issues. The only people that come to me are people who come to undo what's left between themselves and someone that I'm talking to or myself. You know, it's really, really remarkable. So we'll go back into the word initiation. And in that word, there is, if you think about initiation, it's kind of a, you know, fraternities, they have these initiations which are a hazing and they really pick on you and see if you could make it through, right? And sometimes they get out of control and they get in big trouble. But sometimes in our life, it's like nothing we do will work. Anything you count on won't work. It's as if the universe, and I have people like Eckhart Tolle went through these things as well. Any of the big teachers that you and I study have all gone through those, okay? Some of those, whether they've been through one or seven, it doesn't really matter. some through near-death experiences. But what's really interesting about the word initiation is I'm talking to several people who are going through very bleak periods of their lives. And they're saying, gosh, nothing works. I'm doing this, and then now I've got a sore leg, or I'm doing this, and I'm losing my job, and somebody's lying about me, and there's nothing I can do about it. I have to stand there while my life is pulled away from me, while people lie, and I don't know what to do. You know, these are initiation times. You have to breathe. I mean, you can grieve and cry and go berserk too. But after you do that, then you got to think of some other things to do that are actually going to give your body, mind, and your precious, precious soul journey room to move through a period of initiation. So I want each of you, we've had some callers that have been going through these things too, but I want each of you, and I have three people on the tables here, but you at home as well. I want each of you to look at your lives, okay? And if you're already in an initiation period, meaning where things just are slow or they're not working, or you haven't got a job and nothing's working for you, all of this kind of thing, is the universe is not out to beat you up. But in several situations, in many actually that I'm looking at right now, when I look out into this huge audience that we have, I see people being literally, I shouldn't use this image, it's just I see you being pulled away, or the core of your being is being pulled away from attachments. So in the rising, spiraling lights that come up in us, okay, because as we go through experiences, there's this incredibly beautiful spiraling colors going up through our body, mind, bringing morsels of activity from each chakra, like bringing them up. And so here you are going through a tremendous amount of activity deep down inside as a vibrational vehicle of light. And on the outside, you're going, crap, nothing's working. I'm going, yeah, but we have to stop at that point, release as many of the traits of our identity as we can. And you might even have to do that every few hours because we're so attached to our own attachments. It's hilarious. And then just keep doing it, and then surrender to the universe. And you want to breathe like mad. Just breathe and breathe. That's it. Because those ones that I've got lying on the table, and a couple of you out there, are so incredibly depressed that you think this is too much trouble. And I'm saying, well, you know what? Surrendering is probably a lot less trouble than grieving over the fact that the universe is pooping on you, or however you're taking it. I know some that think they're being completely punished by the universe. I'm going, I don't think it's that way. If you look at the spiraling light that is the center of your being, starting at the red chakra, the base of your spine, or starting at the perineum, or however you do it, moving up, moving up, moving up. And sometimes, as we have already said, the aspects of your identity need to be pulled away so that there can be a rising light coming up in you. And what you radiate out into the world is changing, changing, and changing. And it's, remember the old thing about always getting a parking spot? That's got a lot to do with the exact same magic. You raise your fields and frequency in such a way, and you just know that you're being guided and you're getting the right spot. It happened to me today at the DMV. Oh my gosh, I couldn't believe there were lines of cars or this and that. And I just said, you know, I always get a spot. And I just went around the parking lot twice, and boom, somebody pulled out right in front of me, and I went right in there. I didn't even cut anybody off, did I? All right, we're going to wrap this section in light. That was a lot of teaching. But if you are in an initiation period, I can pretty much promise you, unless you're dying, which some of you, I don't see a lot of people dying out here right now, but we do die, that's the thing. But with this initiation, you're dying to your way of being, and you're going to find yourself rising into a new way of being. Usually the initiation is followed by some pretty incredible opportunities, some gifted moments that come to you, some people who come in with new ideas. But you have to really get out of the way. You have to totally surrender. So again, if you're depressed, remember depression is a collection of unspent feelings. And some people can say, oh, I have a doodly-doo kind of depression and I need this kind of medication, blah, blah, blah. But you see, once again, that's really hanging. Don't drop your medication because of what I'm saying right now, but I want you to think about it anyway. Go in and feel that your depression could be a collection of unspent feelings. It could be a familial habit way of dealing with feelings, right? And it could be in your brain pattern, but you might be able to release it by releasing your attachment to being called depressing, needing your antidepressants. See what I mean? It's like we need to, and then all if it's true, and I don't know, but if it's true that you could shift your expectation of needing to be that kind of person, and that's a big shift, you might find yourself becoming a lot more buoyant, and you may not. Maybe it's some illness that does go on. So pay attention. Don't stop taking your meds at this point just because of what I said. But I really want you to look at your identification with these things, you know. Okay, so I'm going to take a break here, and then we're going to go to our beautiful waiter. You've been waiting on line one. Hello, hello. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Veronica.
Hi, Aaliyah.
How are you? I'm good.
I'm absolutely good. I'm absolutely good. Tell me what's going on with you, my friend.
Well, the 11-11 was bringing a bit of energy stuff. I find your conversation very interesting because I think I've been in the initiation process for at least 5 years, if not 15 years. And that process is just, it's just this stripping away of, you know, a very humbling process.
Hey, Aaliyah, that's a great word to use. Now tell us how you interpret the word humbling. Not bumbling.
Well, you know, yeah. Captain Ada would talk about, you know, self-importance and the need to dethrone self-importance because all our energy is really used to uphold self-importance. And self-importance is our identity. It's, you know, it's our need to be right. It's everything, really, that holds the old matrix in place. So the idea of having an identity or not having an identity is very, actually the idea of not having one is very scary to most people. So, you know, but this process of really evolving requires that we kind of strip ourselves of that identity. And that's scary to people because people think that they're dying. The ego thinks it's dying.
But honey, they are, aren't they? They really are dying to...
They are dying. They're dying to their old self, And honestly, it's like that... I'm sorry.
Oh, I just want to say, because of what you were saying, I'm thinking that something that fascinates me is the word success, right? And and what you're talking about, like in identity, we could call it these are the aspects of my success in the world, and that I hang on to for dear life. Okay, now I'm going to drop it off. And now my success relies, I've written a line that I love, which you know how sometimes lines pop out. And I always say, this is my journey to self, to know self, N-O self, to self, to know self. I kind of got to know what I am and what I'm doing so I can be at a state of no self. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's a spiritual aspirant. When you finally get to the point of really what you're doing is you're voiding yourself of all identity. That voiding of identity frees you because it's the identity that keeps you, that we say, serious gravity keeps you down. Keeps you, you know, grounded. Yeah. And a lot of people are very scared of not being grounded. You know, they're scared of not having an identity. And I don't blame them. It's not for the faint of heart.
Well, I think it's pretty hard to make a living if you can't say, oh, I'm a teacher or I'm a whatever.
There's a lot to be said for the other. I mean, I'm not recommending the hard journey to anyone, because it's a very hard journey to do that. You know, it's not an easy thing. I don't think most people choose it. You know, they have the choice. They, even if they take the choice in the beginning because they have some kind of weird romantic idea about this journey, when they really get into it, I think most of them go right back to where they were.
I don't know, because I think, you know, I was thinking the other day, it was absolutely, and I don't pretend to be an amazingly realized spiritual being with no identity. I'm not that, but I do consider this a lot, okay, because to me it's very important when I'm really stuck on my hairdo or whatever, you know, or on the word success. But anyway, quite often I'll be driving around, and LA has a few cars. I don't know if you've ever noticed that. People are rushing around, and people are trying to get somewhere all the time, like whether it's in cars or whether it's in ambition or whether it's in the movies or whether it's in performance. People are trying to get somewhere, right? And so I find myself having a really intriguing time. I'll be driving and I go, drop inside. And I try to just be. And then I call it being in my ashram. So people say, oh, I can't meditate here, it's too noisy. I go, oh, well, I consider the noise kind of the outside of my ashram, if you know what I'm saying. It's kind of
like your shelter.
Yeah, and I laugh at myself because I think I'm quite capricious, a little bit funny inside. I amuse myself. But it's easier than, let me see, the image that I wanted to bring forward is way easier than reacting against it, is learning to separate oneself from it. Do you know what I'm saying? And still remain in the space.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that
makes
sense.
Yeah, that's what they call that detachment.
Really?
Oh, not getting emotionally involved with the illusion of that's thrown up all the time by the emotional component of your feelings, you know, like the
yeah, I think it's a whole thing of being learning to attune to our own being. I think that's what it is. Learning to attune to your being, which is beyond all that. And I don't do it that well, but when I do it, I'm kind of amused with myself. I quite like it, you know?
Yeah.
So tell us something else before we go on and finish our little structures. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Aaliyah. What's happening with your own publication and your book and so on?
Well, I finished my third book I think it was a month and a half when I published the book. But then I'm like, oh my gosh, my second chakra's in overdrive. and I like, you know, I got to back off a little bit. But the creative trough, I call it the trough, between creative waves is very difficult for me. And I recognize that I've pretty much identified myself with the creative urge. And, you know, I need to have some downtime. So I'm doing it, but it's kind of kicking and screaming. And it kind of puts me into creative frustration. Which is my, and that's okay. I mean, I have to experience it occasionally. But publication business, I don't know if I'm going to write more books. It's like, you know, kind of disappointing. But
I want to say, so. Wait a second.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I forgot what I was going to say. It was so interesting. It's something you said has triggered, it'll come back. I'm sorry.
The creative trough? The space between
I know what it is that one of the things to really value, and this is going to sound paradoxical because I just said what I said and we're talking about the same thing of no self and so on. You talked about urges, and I'm going, we each have, and I started to say this at the beginning, that we each have something in us that wants expression. I believe that anyway. Now, people can make me wrong, but I believe that right now, today. All my beliefs are open for grabs, but that one I believe. And sometimes that has, I would say, wings or legs or might or grit of its own and will come through us when we do enough identity release. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, the creative, of course, my subject is creativity. So, you know, my personal feeling is creativity is a force that some people open up to. And that creative force is then channeled to the individual and that individual's particular expression. So that individual's particular expression becomes its own, you know, its own mold, you know, like it kind of molds it, you know. But it's still the same force. It comes through in the channels in different ways.
But don't you think it's different for each person? I mean, the same source, but what I mean is...
Oh, absolutely. See, each person is a personality construct. You know, they as they create, they become more of a creator. As they learn to create, they become more of a creator by channeling that creative force. So they become more real as they consciously create, you know?
Yeah, I think that's
really
good.
As opposed to being a default creation. Yeah.
But I think sometimes, now correct me if you don't agree with this, but I think quite often it's people pulling themselves away from ideals and interpretations and so on to let something come up that they may not have heeded. Not everybody is totally conscious of creativity at all times, but I've watched people and even levels of my own self pulling away all kinds of attachments and grieving and suffering in the middle of it. And then what rises is maybe surprising. It's different than what you expect, maybe. Do you see what I mean?
Well, and also the tension itself of having a human experience or having any kind of lived experience is very creative in itself. So you can channel all that energy into creativity and create out of all of that pain and suffering or whatever you want to define it as. I have a quick question for you.
I don't think... Pardon?
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I was just thinking, I'm thinking of several clients, friends and clients, who are suffering terribly with depression and they can't seem to comprehend the concept of being in a state of initiation. And I keep saying, it's going to rise in you. You have to, and in all cases, they need to detach from some incredible programs and habits that they've had, ways of stifling reaction by keeping it filed in the subconscious or whatever. But in every case that I'm talking about in this moment, there's the will of a gift that wants to rise. There's some dharma that's trying to push up through. And until they've let go enough, it won't show up, if that makes sense. I don't think they can turn around and use the pain and suffering they're in. Because
if they're not a creative if they're not already recognizing themselves as a creative temperament, no, they probably won't.
Yeah, no, this wouldn't be a specific temperament. This is just people going through, you know, the potholes of life, you know, and maybe somebody left them or maybe somebody died. I mean, it doesn't matter what's the trigger, but all of life has just fallen off the bone sort of thing. Right, and you're left with this bone to boil, and there's no boiling until the meat.
Even though I have the outlet of creativity, I still feel the same thing that they do. The outlet of creativity gives me an enormous way to channel that energy. Because it's really all energy, you know. Whether you feel disappointed at something or whether you feel excited by something, it's still energy. It's the way you translate that energy that decides how you're going to use it.
I think if we could get really, really angry when we're disappointed, we could power up our own cars without gas. That was just an idea. Do you like it? I'm also creative.
I love that idea.
Anyway, I always love your calls. It's fun to chat about these things, and I know how deeply they impact us, and they feel, you know, They feel impossible at times, but they're not impossible because they have a life of their own and they're wanting expression too, right?
Yeah. Well, I had a statement I made this morning about to my friend Patty. I said, you know, I've decided I'm going to fire my guide. Just fire them. You know? I'm like, you know, you guys, all you're doing is guiding me towards more books. I'm like, oh, more whatever. I'm like, this is not fun for me. You know, to keep on, I mean, it's fun to produce them, but it's not fun to see no results. I mean, you know, this is ridiculous, you know? So I said, I'm going to fire you guys.
I think that's hilarious.
She was laughing, and she was a little depressed. I said, you know, I really kind of want guides to do me some good. Like, forget this, you know, the spiritual crowd. They're like, oh, we have to be in service. I'm like, forget that stuff. I've been in service, and it's not doing me any good. So I want to get some guides to do me some good. I want some material manifestation here.
I don't think that they get, I think it's good for us to get cranky and upset, because I hoot and holler at mine, and they laugh. They say, we love your antics. But the other thing is that
I want to know.
Hang on a sec. The other thing I think it's really, I think they push us to get those feelings out, because when we stifle them, we lose we lose the connection to source and to the integrity of us in our higher realms, I think. So your guides are very powerful, but I think I should finish this thing before, but you have really, really powerful guides, and there's a lot of light there, and you're really meant to see. I don't know how well you see them, but I see them as these pulsing vibrational beings, and you've got quite almost a little horizon of them there, and they're pushing because you're learning to shift. I always want to shift dimensions. You're learning to shift dimensions in a new kind of way, which you'll teach other people. So what they're showing me is it's not about a book or 7 books or 42 books. It's about a layer of consciousness which you're developing through everything you do that will vibrationally move up. You know, everything. So I was talking about Dharmi, which is that term of like what the collective is moving toward. And with your dharma, you're actually pushing energy into the collective. You're achieving more than you realize, Aaliyah.
Well, that's good to know, because it sure feels like nothing is moving. But I did hear today, I don't remember who it was who said this, he said, when you feel that nothing is moving on the outside, it means that everything is moving really strong on the inside.
Good.
So I'm like, that's probably it, you know, because I'm like, whoa.
Yeah. Well, I think I should go and just do a finishing touch here, but I appreciate your call very much, and I send you much love, and thank you for calling in.
Veronica, I want to tell you to keep this show if you can, because I think you're really helping a lot of people. And
thank you, sweetie. Thank you so much. You know, yeah, I question it, but I'm enjoying it better. Thank you.
I know you do. Well, I'll come on and be a co-host with you. How about that?
Okay, well, we'll talk about that.
Right. You take care. Right. Well, give me a call.
Okay. You got it. Okay. Bye. Bye. All right. We're going to finish this off by doing our, I want to do a collective, let's see, a fresh table. Let's have our healing teams replicate themselves around some fresh healing tables. And I want you to put your favorite political, let's not put a political person, let's put a political issue. Up on each table. And I want you to make a difference on the planet. So put a political issue on each table. We got 3 tables here. And I always am fussing about the GMO thing, or it could be the water, or it could be the weather, the atmospheric doodah that's going on, global warming is what I'm trying to say. It can be something very big like that, because you and I know that it can be created with your help and mine, that all of us are nurtured, all of us are fed, all of us, like oneness, can evolve into this very happy and very nurturing species. We can do that. It doesn't look that way right now, but you don't listen to Fox News, for heaven's sakes. get on to KPFA or KPFK or whatever. Get on to some of these alternate radio shows, BBS radio. So let's just see yourself putting on each of these tables one of the issues that you've chosen. I'll let you choose it. And I want to see the issue there, and I want to see it be resolved, and I want to see it be in a spiraling light and moving and dancing higher and higher. That's right. So for me, if I'm talking GMOs, I'm infusing it all with light. I know if we put a lot of vibrations into the food, because you're going to unwittingly be eating GMO'd food too. So let's put in the light of healing and the light of transformation and the light that suits our evolution as opposed to anything else in our foods. And what else? The water for the world. May the water be purified. May the water be plentiful. May the rains come in a beautiful, beautiful way and nurture all the flowers, the trees, the people, the animals. There we go. And may we have free energy, energy that is brought through the universes, energy that you can learn how to create, and I can learn how to create, and our children can learn how to create, so that we can power up everything we need to empower. And then I heard a thing, I was talking about KPFK, and I heard a thing on it today where they were saying, what about the future of travel? Let's travel with magnetics instead of roads. And they had all kinds of hovercraft moving around the world and visiting, no toxicity. Oh, wasn't that exciting? This is Veronica Entwistle saying thank you so much for listening to Radiance by Design. Now, remember, everybody, my book, My Near Life Experience, or How Do I Know When I'm Really Me, is coming through the birth canal Tuesday. I'm very, very excited. It's my first book, not my seventh book. It's my first book. And it's a story. It's my own story. It's my own epic journey to this age, you know, where I feel very, very alive now. Boy, I really wasn't embodying my existence, my own dharma. I wasn't doing that for big sections of my life, but I've had a really interesting life. So I will be excited to get some of your feedback. And what I've learned is that if you want to buy my book, and I'm not trying to be a huge marketer here, but as I told you at the beginning, I'm learning how to do that. If you buy it on the 17th, I get points, and apparently I'm aiming for my graph to shoot up that it could be a bestseller. So please, if you're interested in buying my book, go on to Amazon and buy it on the 17th of November. That's next Tuesday. And if you don't, I'll love you anyway. But I'm trying to learn to play the game, so let's play the game together. This is Veronica Entwistle saying, let me know how you are. Phone, write, play Veronica at veronicaentwistle.com, or veronicaentwistle.com is my website. And here I am and here you are. We'll talk soon. Oh, Bernie Siegel's up on my Paradigm Shifters on Tuesday. So check that out, 8 o'clock Tuesday night. Much love to all of you. Good night.